You have just tuned in to the Child Welfare Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Cherish Fields, master level social worker and child welfare leader. Here at the Child Welfare Leaders Podcast, we are challenging the status quo with authentic conversations about what you can do that will challenge the way you think, provide you with the knowledge to improve practice, spark the inspiration needed to lead against the status quo, and empower you to grow against the grain, all while breaking the barriers in your way that will set a new standard of leading the change you desire to see in child welfare. Now, join me as we start the conversation. Welcome to the Child Welfare Leaders Podcast. We are back with another episode. Y'all, it has been a crazy couple of months. I took an unexpected break in April, but hopefully that left you some time to catch up to unheard episodes. Today, I'm excited because we are back on and I couldn't leave Foster Care Awareness or Mental Health Awareness Month without having a special guest for you. My guest is actually a mentee of mine. I've been mentoring her and known her ever since she was 16 years old. And now she is fully grown woman. And I'm so excited because it's kind of a full circle moment for us as she met me through my speaking and sharing my story. And now I have been following her and been a fan of hers as she has written a book, and shared her story, but also speaking, advocating, and now having her own nonprofit to really make a difference and a change in the child welfare system. So I'm really honored to have her on the show. And I'm so proud of her and all of her accomplishments. Recently, she has gotten married. And so she has gone from Brittany Turner to Mrs. Brittany Hill. And so I am so excited for her to come on board and share her expertise, her insight, and her life experiences with us today. And currently she is doing her thing from Atlanta, Georgia, and making change out here really across the country, though, because she travels and she has met some really top-notch people who really have helped kind of spread the word about bringing some awareness. So I figure, why not bring a champion of spreading awareness about not only foster care, but also mental health. So welcome, Brittany, and I'm overjoyed to have you on the Child Welfare Leaders show.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for that introduction. That was nice. I was like, wait, I did all that?
Yeah.
But man, we go way back. I was a junior, sophomore, somewhere around there. And then I think we've been rocking ever since. So it's beautiful to be able to be here and have been, you know, in the heart of the system and not knowing where life would take me. So to be here, it's overwhelming in a good way. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You know, I love how I've just watched you grow from someone who probably didn't want to share her experiences, right? Was probably dealing with some shame regarding her experiences, to being so confident and transparent in your experiences for the greater good, right? Not to just share a story, but to share a story with purpose. And so y'all can't see her, but she rocking a shirt, Never Stop Dreaming. So she literally fully embraces her brand and what she's building because she truly cares about, you know, really making a difference and helping people to understand that sometimes you got to start from the bottom, and that might mean just having a suitcase and a dream. And so, Brittany, tell us a little bit about that, a suitcase and a dream. Where was the origins of that? Maybe you can give us a little brief background on your history.
Oh, man. So a suitcase and a dream, it started, oh, goodness. I was a dreamer in foster care. Long story longer, I always wanted to live in Georgia. So it was just a dream. And I had an opportunity to meet my biological family. I left Michigan, was in Dallas, and got a call, and I ended up in Georgia, literally with a red broken suitcase, I'll never forget, and dreams of living in Atlanta. And this year makes 10 years. Oh my goodness. It makes 10 years since I've been in Georgia. And I was telling someone the other day, like, if I don't know how to do nothing else, I know how to dream, you know? And hey, I'm gonna just keep dreaming until they come to life, they happen, they manifest, all that. But A Suitcase and a Dream was just, you know, I don't know if people, you know, you have this dream and, you know, you say you want to do it, but being in foster care, you know, and dreaming, it takes you to a whole nother place. And you're not just focused on the situation you're in. It's like, okay, let me imagine myself being here. And that's what I did. I imagined myself in Georgia and I got here and I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, you know, you talk a little bit about dreaming. What led you to dreaming in foster care? Like, why couldn't you focus on the present? What landed you, if you're willing to share with us, what landed you in foster care?
So drugs. I remember this was fifth grade, coming home from school, and my twin looked in the cabinets and there was no food. And my mom saw it. She saw the reaction. She saw my sister emotional. And she said she was going to do something about it. And they started stealing, you know, from Kmart. And y'all know back then they didn't have sensors on the clothes. So you could just walk in and get what you wanted and leave out. You know, we were taught how to steal. For fifth grade graduation, you know, we had took six outfits in, whichever one we liked, put it on and go on about your business. But it was stealing and it was the drugs. You know, every new city brought new people and new drugs. That was just the thing, you know. So, and then just the neglect.
When you say neglect, what do you mean?
So, I hate to say this because I'm finding that as I'm sharing my story, I'm getting, you know, calls and DMs, you know, because what I'm saying is a lie, but I'm telling it the way I remember it, you mm-hmm. know, and what I saw through my young eyes at, mm-hmm. let's go back to 8 and mm-hmm. 7, mm-hmm. you know, not, you know, being in a house by ourselves, just me and my siblings, you know, not having food. And if we did get food, we had it outside in the snow. You know, mm-hmm. that was our refrigerator. You know, going to families' houses to use the microwave. They had no idea what was going on, but they like, okay, why are they hogging up the microwaves? You know, but not having a parent be present.
Yeah. And so, you know, your mom struggling with drugs, right? And kind of leaving you guys left on your own. At what point did the system come in, step in and say, hey, let's get these kids to a safer situation?
So from my understanding, they had, my sisters and my mom had, they were being watched. So one particular day they go in to Kmart, and this is in Port Huron, Michigan. And my mom was like, this don't feel right. So she walked out. And another sister kept pushing the cart, and the sheriff, you know, just tapped her on the shoulder, and it was just like a storm. You know, 2003, that was the year the Cheetah Girls came out, and it was a year of sixth grade. And I remember my mom telling CPS that she had two other kids, and I'd have been good. Don't tell them you got two other ones. Let me, you know, figure this out. You know, I've been on my own, right? So she told them they had two more, and they came back to the projects. And my youngest sister and I, we was on the run. Like, we ran. And I remember CPS coming, and I got in the back of the car, and I remember reporting a rape. You know, I felt safe. You know, couldn't nobody kill me. And I think then, once I opened my mouth, is when I learned to speak up for myself and things that went on. On supervised visits in the foster homes, I was saying something, period.
So you and your sister were finally removed. Did they find you, or you guys?
They found us. The two were already taken, but then they learned that my sister and I were twins. Mm-hmm. So of course, we were all together, you know, that one night. But when they learned about us being twins, they kept us together and the other two went elsewhere. So that was, you know, rough in itself, because you got these, you know, four little Black girls from Flint, Michigan. You know, only thing we know is our environment. So now we're in this Caucasian household. You know, so talk about a culture shock. Mm-hmm. You know, we Black. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we with these white folks. So it was new to us. Natural hair wasn't in. You know, so having to adjust in a world that wasn't familiar. Mm. You know, so.
You know, that's pretty powerful that you say that, you know, because we live in a culture that we're definitely highlighting some of the racial differences, and there's some part of our society that wants to say race doesn't matter, right? And then there's part of our culture that is saying, no, race does matter, right? And I'd like to say that there's definitely a balance, right? What do you think that the system, we as professionals, need to know or could have done better in a situation? Because you mentioned something that's pretty powerful that I have heard a lot. And I think this is will bring a level of awareness to foster care and understanding the different dynamics regarding different cultures and races. So here are four little Black girls that are taking out of an environment of poverty, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. And high stress, probably trauma. I'm going to go on a limb and say that your mom probably have endured a life of significant trauma herself. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you know, probably provided the best that she could to her kids, but really didn't know how, right?
Yeah.
And so her decisions, behaviors, and the lack of knowledge led to her children being removed from her to provide them with some level of safety. But then what the system did was take you all and put you in a non-person of color's house, which you guys had never really been around. So what could we have done as collectively as professionals and in the system to maybe do that better or be more, what could we have been more knowledgeable about? Talk to us a little bit about that.
You know, that's a good question. I hate to say I don't know, but I feel like I do know. You know, is there proper preparation for, you know, getting Black kids in white homes? You know, hair. You know, we in a society now where hair is everything. I feel like, in my opinion, it would have been to not only know Black hair, but to even know Black culture, especially if you're fostering and you're getting all different kinds of races. You need to know every, from Black to white to Hispanic, you need to know every background, you know, and if it's not being taught in the trainings, you know, do it for yourself. You know, I remember this is sixth grade. So you go from elementary to middle school. And I remember needing a Black crayon in art class. And this kid was like, oh, you're already Black, so you don't need a crayon. You know, and mind you, this is culture shock. Never been in a white environment, you know, so like, what? So now being in foster care, whatever that was at 10, right, or 11, and it's like a whole nother world. So what I know, you know, I guess it's being ghetto or this little Black girl, you know, I can't react, right? Because you don't know, you know, what's going to happen. So then you shut down. So can we really get into this? Can we really talk about it? So, you know, being Black and in this white environment and not hearing, you know, how pretty you look or your hair or your skin. So bring that into the age now at 30 and somebody says, oh my God, I love your hair. So do you say thank you or, oh, really? That's the response, you know, that we give, I give, because I didn't hear it. You know, it was always you too dark or your eyes are too big, your lips are too big, that in that environment. So foster care, whether, you know, it's Black foster parents getting the white kids, know the culture, you know how to do what brushes to use. I think that's the biggest thing that should be, you know, taught. Like, you know, it's certain things that that African Americans, us Black folk, can I say that? That
yeah,
we
you
do.
Said it. Yep. We real, you know, here, we keep it 100.
You know, with certain things that we're accustomed to, you know, as being Black people, you know, it's in us, you know, so don't, you know, withhold Black culture because, you know, you're white and the child is Black. You know, they, I don't know. I hope I don't start nothing.
No, I think this is important because you raise a point that hasn't been talked about on here fully on my show fully. And I like that you're kind of bringing this to the forefront because I think this is a level of awareness. And honestly, it's a level of awareness in foster care, what happens and how we need to prepare foster parents better, or even in residential yeah. facilities, right? In mm-hmm. form staff. But I think also just what it does to your mental health. So we yeah. right on, we hitting something yeah. real good organically yeah. here because mm-hmm. you're right. So I used to be a worker that licensed foster parents. And one of the things that kind of came up in like when I worked with the foster parents is, you know, the majority of them were, you know, white families. Yeah. And I would say pretty decent, well-off white families, right? They were not living in the quote unquote hood, right? Like right. many of us did and or were raised in. And they had nice homes and things of that nature. And they were going to 9 times out of 10 take what? Black kids, Black babies, right? And one of the things that we found is a lot of people would ask me, you know, how do I do their hair? You know, and that isn't a training that's infused in the initial trainings to become a foster parent. And what we do know, right, is statistics tell us, anybody can Google it. You know, I don't have time to give you guys references right now, but it's very easy. And everyone knows that there's a disproportionate number of African-American children in the foster care mm-hmm. system. So mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, right, families who are signing up to do foster to foster children, you're probably going to end up with at least one Black kid, right? And yeah. so what you're saying is very good. And I think that those who are listening, who work in agencies, who lead agencies that work with foster parents and foster children, adoptive parents, all of that, I think that is one thing that we should make mandatory is learning culturally, how can we prepare not the home just for making sure it has a bed and making sure that it's livable and placement ready, but making sure that parents and caregivers are equipped the knowledge and information and tools, resources. So one of the things that I did, for instance, you probably enjoy this, Brittany, is when I was working as a licensing worker, I created a newsletter that had information about African-American hair care products, where to get them, the different stores, to buy, purchase things, what to pay attention to in the hair, you know, hair, how many times to wash it, because you can't wash it every day, like others, right? And so they really enjoyed that. And it's not that there is an unwillingness to learn either. So I think incorporating mandatory trainings to bring knowledge and identify some resources for families is not something that would be opposed. You know, I think that it would absolutely be something that's very, very much so needed. And I think a part of that too could be having access to beauticians that come in and kind of run trainings even, you know, to talk about how do I care for, you know, this child's hair. Because I used to actually go into the homes and sometimes some of my visits were doing those kids' hair, you know, which was unorthodox as a social worker. But if that was the need, I was teaching the parent how to do it because they were at a loss. They were trying, right? And so what you're saying is so critical. But I think you even went, I'll take a step further, not only just the information, but you said something I think hits on the mental health part, is the affirming children, Black children in their hair mm-hmm. and how they look, mm-hmm. their mm-hmm. skin, right? You're right. Hair is everything to our culture.
If I can intervene for a second.
Absolutely.
So you think about, you go into this whole new world of foster care or this environment. So now you're dealing with not belonging, right? Mm-hmm. One, because you're Black.
Yep.
Two, because they're white. And then three, is not your family.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So now you don't belong. You don't feel wanted, appreciated. You don't feel loved. And then you add in not knowing who you are.
Mm.
And then I believe hair really plays a part in that.
Yes.
Because if let's be honest, if our hair don't look good, mm-hmm. we don't feel good.
Don't feel good.
So mm-hmm. so imagine, you know, this 10-year-old girl with all this hair, but nobody knows how to manage it. And nobody's managing me and my emotions. But let's get into this mental health. But here's this therapist and this psychiatrist, and here's this medicine. But you're reading a file. But you're not reading my heart. You're not examining my heart. Because what's on paper, if we being real, what's on paper, and if we can go a little further, what's on paper prevents these older kids from being adopted or being fostered? Because they read what's on paper and not what's literally in the heart.
Yeah.
And you miss out, right?
Yeah.
You really miss out on who that child can become. You know, and let's talk about it, you know, fostering and really just fostering the mind, the heart, and the spirit, and most of all the dreams, because you don't know who's coming into your house. It could be the next Steve Jobs, the next Simone Biles, the next Britney, like mm-hmm. you don't know.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, let's really dig deep into this. This is good.
Mm-hmm. That's
you know,
real good.
Talk about, you know, not fostering in fear, you know, and what it means to be a leader, you know, leading in faith, fostering in faith. So, I mean, we can tackle all of that, but I didn't mean, I get excited and I get a little frustrated on these topics mm-hmm. because no one really hears us and no one is seeing the real issue at hand, you know, but when your hair is not done, I mean, how do we really know who we are? I mean, do we, you know, and a lot of people, you know, you go to stores and you see these young girls and the hair all over their head, you know, and it's like, man, I can only imagine what they feel, you know, and you're looking at these other people and the hair is done and it's like the confidence, you lose it. And then mm-hmm. there's these self-esteem issues. But because I'm experiencing something doesn't necessarily mean that I'm depressed. I am in an environment that I don't know. So I'm shut down and I need to readjust. But I also, while I'm readjusting, need to feel appreciated and I need to feel wanted. And I need to feel like you want me here, not just because it's foster care and you have a license, but you want me here because it's what's in your heart. You know,
or hold up, let me take it a step further because I love what you're saying. Or don't be trying to just because you want to do good.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Be, mm-hmm. Or we should be, you know, we should be grateful, right?
Right.
Be grateful right. because I've opened my home and my uh-huh. family to you, right? And it's like,
yeah.
thank you, but I didn't ask for this, right?
Right.
So, and that's what I think right. that's the disconnect that folks have is that. Those that have been in foster care, you know, like me and you, right? We've had experiences in the foster care system as children, and people want you to be grateful. And it's like, to a level, yeah, I am, but I didn't ask for this. So what? Why do I have to be grateful for something that I didn't ask for? And honestly, I don't even understand, right? I don't understand why I was taken out. Yeah, was I in pain and hurting? And did I not eat? Did I, well, you know, were there those factors? But at the end of the day, I really don't know what I'm supposed to have versus what I'm not supposed to have, right? Because if that's how I was introduced into the world because of my family dynamics, all I know is the struggle, right? And I don't really recognize the right, the wrong, what, you know, what I'm missing versus what I have. And I think that that's where people kind of really get it mixed up. So I love what you're saying about like really seeing a child, helping them and not knowing like, who's coming into your house in terms of this person could be the next president. This person could be the next Oprah. This person could be next Tyler Perry or anyone, right? Steve Jobs. You got to foster the dreams and the spirit, the person who, and not just who they are at that moment. You're fostering who they can be, that potential that's there, that purpose that's inside of them that's been locked up because of all the trash that they have inside of them, right? And so it's like fostering is so much bigger than just taking a child into your home and saying, I'm gonna give them all the love, because people do think, right, that, oh, just love in a home. These kids just need love in a home and let me feed them and da-da. No, it's not a pet. It's not a dog. Like, you know, I used to, you know, have the same issue of, you know, I think when I was adopted, I think that, you know, to some extent, I think that I always said, like, I think that some people just need pets, not a child, because it's not that easy, right? Yeah. It's not that way. So I love what you're saying. I love what you're saying. So we need to be, so what you're saying, so I can summarize it, if you will. So what you're saying is that we need to, as a system and as professionals in the system, is be more conscious and helping to really empower people who sign up to assist and care, be the caregivers of children, to not just foster children, but foster the dreams and foster the person, the individual that come into their home. And if they are a African-American or a person of color, is to make sure that they have the knowledge, right, that they need so that they can do it right, which is affirming them, making sure they have the right products, making sure that they're really truly not just caring for the child, but really grooming that child, really helping that child to really become their whole self, right? And that might mean, in time, not to wipe away their history, right? Yeah. That's infusing the history. Yes, you come from a mother who endured drugs. I always tell people, don't deny who their parents are. Don't do that. But respect the fact that your mother might be struggling with drugs. So I'm stepping in to help her, help your parent. Yeah. You know what I mean? As they're going through something, to just be that next person to carry you along the rest of the way until either you can go back to her, or that if you don't, which all ultimately we know, they go back. Every kid goes back, whether it's an adult, they become an adult and go back, or, you know, they're still a child and go back. So, you know, that's powerful. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. All right. So we got to hit on that. So we definitely as professionals need to be more conscious of what we're really fostering. And that's really what I hear your message is saying. Be it that all the things that you've gone through, you've just learned that there was so much in you that was ignored, and that really honestly probably made some of your mental health struggles a little worse, because you didn't have anyone really seeing you. And what you saw, right? Or speaking into more than what you saw. And so that's a huge part of fostering, right?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that, because one of the first things, you know, that's done is an evaluation in this medicine. So if you're saying I have depression and I have anxiety and I have bipolar, so you're telling me that I have it, but tell me what it is. You're forcing this medicine on me, like, oh, this is what you have, but now take this. But tell me what it is. Tell me why I have it. So at 18, when I was legal, I took myself off of all of that medicine, because no one explained what the heck depression was. So here I am, 18, let's say up until 25-ish, maybe 26. Talk about literally being at the peak of your mental illness. So I'm on this medicine because y'all said I have it, or I had it, but no one really broke down. You know, trauma led to this. Being raped led to this. Being neglected led to this. Don't just say what it is. Here's this medicine. So you're giving me a manual, but I can't read. I can't understand what the hell it is. If we be real, let's really talk about it. Yeah. You know, so now talk about going through the motions and being on this roller coaster and wanting to die and not having a place in this world, whatever this world is and what it looks like, just not belonging. And you find yourself, you know, with a straitjacket and behind these doors and breaking down, not knowing if you'll ever be who God has called you to be, because you don't know. Nobody ever said. So yeah, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get off this, but I don't know why I'm experiencing. Why am I feeling like this? You know, why am I up one day and then down the next? Right. So I think at 25, I was at the peak. I mean, just struggling. And I'm like, what didn't know? And I remember at school, just, you remember, because you threatened to come down a couple of times. I remember there was this dumpster, and every day at 12 o'clock, I would cry, and I would just go behind a dumpster and cry, because I felt like I resonated with the dumpster. You know, I felt like trash, you know, and that's just the best way to describe, you know, nobody. But then you got, you crazy or you'll be all right. You know, we hear that too, but I wasn't okay, but nobody saw the pain, or no one heard, you know, those cries, and no one heard the cries for help, and they still don't, you know?
So you're saying that essentially when you were going through your therapist, so those who are mental health professionals, we should be more conscious and intentional about really taking the information that you're sharing in sessions. But if you're diagnosed with something, talking through talking through it with that person with you is saying, yeah, you have depression, but you have depression because you've endured these things. So helping somebody bring a level of understanding to maybe that's why it. They have the mental health, you know, struggle at the moment. Mm-hmm. But let's take it a step further. What about even saying that you don't have to have it forever?
That's it.
That at this time you've gone through so much, so it's okay. I'm gonna tell you something that I had that you probably didn't. I don't know all that I was diagnosed with probably when they diagnosed me, but I can tell you that when I became an adult, like in my early 20s, I struggled with depression and a lot of the stuff I self-diagnosed initially, because it was like, what's going on? And I had all the symptoms. So I said, I must be depressed. But one of the things that not only did my pastor do, but the therapist that he put me in connection to, right? And so that's also different too, having a pastor connect you to a therapist. But they said, you're not crazy. You've just been through way too much for your short period of time. You're carrying a heavy load. Mm-hmm. It's crazy that you have to do that, but you are not crazy. And that made me cry my eyes out, literally, because it was so refreshing, but then also so painful to hear, you know, at the same time. And people walked me through. You were basically, my mental health struggle was normal for the fact of all that I had to carry. So it was like a normalization of like, no, it's not okay, but it's understandable why you're here.
Yeah.
Because look at all of this. And then it was reframed to say, look how strong you are.
Yeah.
Like, this is a lot of strength that not many can have. However, you don't have to stay this way. We're going to get you through it. Right. Yep. And here's the steps, so that you're opening this door for a person to see hope, right?
Yep. Okay. Yep. All right.
So we got some work to do on the mental health professionals of really working with the kids, is not just letting them talk about their experiences, but helping them to understand them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. You are hitting on it today, Brittany. Listen here, you better educate us.
And, you know, and I said the other day, I'm not an expert, but I believe my experiences really helps me to be able to just redirect, you know, because I said, one of the things I did say, you know, if I do therapy, I told myself, if I do therapy once a week, that would be the deal breaker for me not to take medication. Because if I'm doing the work, I'm showing up for me. Because at the end of the day, ain't nobody going to show up for you but you. You know, so I'm doing my part. And I had this therapist. I showed up to the session via Zoom, waited for at least 20 minutes just to get an email to say, I forgot about the session. Hmm. And I'm like, what? I'm doing my part. I'm showing up. You know, I want to heal. You know, and I want, you know, to experience, you know, a life without pain and having to go back. So to be able to show up for myself and not have the professional, you know, hold up her end of the stick was just, so I went back and I just recently found another office. It's called Dream Again. Talk about being divine and just how God aligns. But it's called Dream Again, so I'm excited. I'll be starting this upcoming week.
Okay. I'm
back consistently, so.
Okay. And I think that's something to know too, is that as professionals working with children in the foster care system, is understanding that their mental health struggles shouldn't be labels and to make judgment on them.
Yeah,
but to really help them overcome mm-hmm. the mental health struggles. And maybe what we do know is there's going to probably be some mental health struggles throughout the life, but you're learning yeah. how to advocate for yourself, be knowledgeable about it, and then know when to get help, right? Before it yep. gets bad, right? And so mm-hmm. I think that's the piece. People have to help in the system make mental health help more normal and natural versus you need to speak to, you're required to speak to a mental health professional and it's almost right. like a job or a consequence, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Versus this is how we all should take care of ourselves. Cause I don't know about you, Brittany, but it's a lifestyle for me. I got a therapist yeah. as a lifestyle. I got somebody on speed dial just to sometimes just check in and talk to, and it might not be nothing crazy going on in my life, but just having that person to talk to and say, you know what, here's some of the things. They might bring something to my awareness. So yeah. sometimes it's just good. Or it might just be, I got a therapist who will just say, you are doing so good. And I'm so proud of you. Look at where you come from, you yeah. know, and having that affirmation, right? Sometimes yeah. it's just super helpful. So I think we all have to work on, when we are working with the children, it's helpful to understand that therapy is not a bad thing. And it's not a consequence. It's really, yeah. everybody needs it. It's self-care. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really self-care.
Yep, that's
so good. You know, Brittany, you brought a lot of things out in this conversation. I'm so proud of you, girl. I'm so proud of you. This is a great interview. I thank you so much for sharing like your vulnerability about your story. But you highlighted some major things about fostering, adopting, and those that caregive children in foster care, because that is so true. And honestly, it's something that we really need to do better at across the board. Yeah. When we do have to take kids into the system mm-hmm. to keep them safe. I want to take a few moments to, you know, give some spotlight to your nonprofit, maybe how people can, you know, follow you and kind of be a part of what you're doing to advocate for kids. And then I kind of want to also take a moment and allow you to give us some advice, maybe some three things that you could feel like we could do to be able to be the change that we want to see in the system. So go ahead. Yeah.
Well, y'all can find me on Instagram, Suitcase Dream Foster Care, LinkedIn, Brittany Sherrell, Facebook, the same Brittany Sherrell. The Suitcase in a Dream is... You know, like I said, it started out as a book. And I just remember saying, God, it has to be more than just this book.
But hold on. You mentioned book. So you got to tell them where to find the book so they can buy the book.
You can get the book on my website, www.suitcasedreams.org, or you can order through Amazon. And that book was a dream. Let's get into that. It was a dream.
Yes.
I was 13 in my group home. And I told the therapist I wanted to write a book. She handed me a pamphlet and I took it and I ran with it. 2019, it came out. And I think a year later, I was just, it has to be more than just a book. And so A Suitcase and a Dream nonprofit was birthed actually last year, 2021. And now we are providing suitcases right now to those youth who are aging out of the system. And it comes with a dream kit. So from a blanket, a pillow, and a journal. So, and then the food, so like the non-perishables. And right now we're writing on the suitcases, never stop dreaming. Because we all know life after foster care can take you any and everywhere. And most of the time, homelessness. And I want whoever, you know, gets a suitcase to see Never Stop Dreaming, whether it's from me signing it or Denzel Washington or a cop, any and everybody to sign it, because we need these kids to know, you know, that they could keep dreaming, you know, that trouble don't last always. Like it just don't. Far as the three tips, I have one, and mentorship. I mean, it's so vital. It is so necessary to those that age out of the system. I've had several throughout my journey, and I think this has been the longest. You've been the longest mentor, mother figure to me. And we started, 16, 17, and I'm 30 now. So, but to be able to have a mentor that's as authentic as they can be and unapologetic about any and everything that they do. Because why apologize? If you real and you keeping it 100, why do you need to apologize for being who you are? You know, but mentors, I mean, providing a hope that we talked about, you know, these young people seeing that there's life after foster care and that they can overcome the system. And using their stories to give hope, you know, to people coming up after them. And, you know, I feel like I'm proof of what life can look like after the system, you know, but mentorship, that's all I got is mentors.
Okay. So the way we be changed is become mentors. And sometimes you could do that in your position as a foster care worker, as a foster parent, right? It's about lifelong relationships. So we have to do better with making sure that we're not just making an impression with our kids by doing the work, right? Yep. Checking off the box to make sure that we appease the government, you know, by doing the job, but really going above and beyond and fostering the relationships, right? So that they know that there is hope and there is life beyond foster care, that this is just a temporary situation, truly, that will live with them forever, but they ultimately they have choice as to how they live with it forever. Mm-hmm. Listen, if you guys, she didn't say it, but I'll say it, follow her on Instagram. She meets a lot of amazing people. Like I said, she's truly an advocate that is unafraid and very courageous to talk to whoever she needs to about foster care and getting that word out. But follow her on IG, Suitcase Dream Foster Care. You will see all that she's doing with her nonprofit and how she's growing and developing her nonprofit business for kids in foster care. And, you know, definitely support and partner with her. Hire her to speak at your conferences or to your foster parents or to the kids if you ever get them together to hear her story. She's pretty dynamic. Well, we're going to close out here. I am so excited about this full circle moment with my mentee and who all she's become. So grateful to have been a part of her journey. And now that you're a part of this journey on this podcast, So grateful. Well, guys, this is the end of this show. I hope that you guys have gotten a ton of great insight that you will use in your day-to-day, because honestly, everything that she said is so real, it's so authentic, and can definitely help us be the change that we want to see and lead change right where we are. All right, guys, you know what to do. Make sure that you share this podcast with others on your social media. Make sure you get the word out. Make sure you pass this episode along to whoever will hear because we definitely want them to get the information more than I really want you to subscribe to the show. The information is really very important in what she shared. But your support is always appreciated. So if you can, go ahead, hit the subscribe button, share it with other people who may have the same interest in foster care and making change and leading change right where they are. Thank you. Grateful for you. Till next time. Make sure to spread the awareness about mental health and Foster Care Month. Take care.